Welcome to CFRI's Cystic Fibrosis Community Voices, a video podcast series created by and for the cystic fibrosis community.
Welcome, everyone. Hello, I'm Siri Vaith. I'm the executive director of CFRI, the Cystic Fibrosis Research Institute, and I welcome you to a very special episode of our CF Community Voices podcast program. Today, we'll hear from Marianne O'Hara, who will share the importance of authoring one's own legacy or that of a loved one. Before we get started, as always, I have to remind you that nothing presented here should be used for medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment, and to consult with your medical team before making any changes to your health regimen. I want to thank our sponsors whose generosity have made this podcast possible. These include Vertex Pharmaceuticals, Genentech, Chiesi USA, Viatris, and Gilead Sciences. And now it is my honor to introduce our presenter, Marianne O'Hara. Marianne is the author, most recently, of Little Matches, a memoir of grief and light that was released by HarperCollins earlier this year. Little Matches is inspired by NineLiveNotes.com, a blog Marianne kept while her daughter Caitlin, who lived with cystic fibrosis, was waiting for, waiting for a lung transplant. Since Caitlin's passing, Marianne has been certified by the University of Vermont's Lerner College of Medicine as an end-of-life doula so that she may better speak to the state of end-of-life care in our culture. Little Matches is a People Magazine Book of the Week, and Marianne and Caitlin's story has been featured in Time, the Boston Globe, Psychology Today, the New York Times, and elsewhere. Marianne, we are so honored to have you here with us to share your incredible expertise, your deep perspectives, and to really teach us about the deep value of life interviews and providing guidance to us on how to conduct them. Welcome, Marianne.
Thank you so much for having me here. It's my treat to offer this workshop to people because I do think legacy stories are important for everyone, no matter your age or your current health. So I've put together a presentation with a lot of visuals. And what I'm going to do is hide myself, and then I'm going to share my screen, show the slideshow, give you the presentation, and then it's about 10, 15 minutes of talking, and then we go into a mini workshop. And at the end, we can have a Q&A, and I can also provide people with the questions and prompts that I will be using during the workshop. Okay? And we start with a little video.
After I lost my daughter, Caitlin, I looked for revelation. I became every human who has ever looked for answers to the hard questions. Where is she? Is she? Is there more to life than this life? Does consciousness survive death? Does my existence serve any real purpose? Does anyone's? So I wrote Little Matches from inside real-time grief, and I asked those big life questions. Caitlin became a real sage for all of us. She had so much wisdom. And the last couple of years, while she was waiting for her lung transplant and she was on oxygen, it was easier to write than to speak. After her passing, many of her friends shared her writing with me, including text messages, conversations that would have been lost forever, were recorded. So all of her old soul wisdom is in the book in a really cool way. I know I'm not the first person to lose what's most important to me. Humans lose all the time and lose hard. Little Matches is for anyone who loses and asks, now what?
So there she is. I wrote Little Matches to share who this wonderful being was, to share her wisdom, and to make a record of my search for answers to those big life questions. In my fiction, I'd always explored those themes, but in a ruminating sort of way. It wasn't until I was living inside unbearable grief that answers became necessary. I realized I needed to write the personal. I needed to establish my daughter's legacy. What is my role in this lifetime? Like so many people who live with serious illness, Caitlin was reflective. She gave a lot of thought to questions of meaning and purpose and legacy. What is legacy? The dictionary tells us that one definition is something transmitted from the past. We tend to think of legacy as something tangible, offered to the present and to the future. In many cases, it is wisdom, wisdom handed down. Well, as so many of you know, cystic fibrosis is the genetic lung disease that Caitlin was diagnosed with at age 2. CF predisposes people to chronic infections that destroy lung tissue, but it's usually a slow process, as it was with Caitlin. She was able to live a pretty normal existence, at least on the outside, for most of her life. I always appreciated that I was able to put CF in a box. If we weren't in crisis mode, I was very, very good at compartmentalizing. I had a saying, let's not ruin today worrying about tomorrow. It meant that we lived as happily as we could. It meant that Caitlin didn't define herself by her disease. And since severe decline is not inevitable, we were always able to live with hope for the future. Decline was gradual. Day to day, you wouldn't notice. But over the years, she went from being this fast little runner in elementary school to a recreational jogger in college to being someone who had to be content with walking her adorable dog. But she adapted. We humans are coded to adapt. In an email she wrote to a school friend she reconnected with later in life, she wrote about how tricky her 20s had been. It wasn't so bad that I couldn't fake it and kind of live normally. But I also couldn't strike out and do something bold. It really was this constant picking and choosing of battles, fun, etc. To the outside world, she looked completely healthy. CF is often invisible. So many of us live with an invisible something. When the time came that she needed oxygen 24/7 and needed a lung transplant, we entered into limbo, the limbo of waiting for transplant. For medical reasons, we had to move from Boston to Pittsburgh for the surgery. We hoped it would happen within a few months. In fact, she waited for 2.5 years. As we waited, I laser focused on the positive, a successful outcome that would allow her to return to independent living. I'm here playing hospital hangman with her to help keep her spirits up. And here she is with her spirits up. Our positivity wasn't ignorance or wishful thinking. People do survive lung transplants and go on to live fulfilling lives. But part of me knew, of course it did, that I could outlive Caitlin. An organ transplant is risky business with no guarantees. And besides, there are all the other everyday threats facing humans: routine accidents, acquired diseases, viruses. I had seen one brother-in-law taken by a surprise brain aneurysm at age 29. And my father died of heart disease at 59. I knew that we are all temporary, that the arc of a human life, even a long one, is a blink in time. So why didn't I gather up more of Caitlin while I could? Why didn't I make more recordings of her voice? Why didn't I ask her every question I might ever want an answer to? One reason was because I wouldn't have wanted to upset her, especially during the wait for surgery. Why are you asking me this stuff? Do you think I'm not going to make it? But the real reason was the most basic human reason. We always think we have more time. We should know better. We know we will die, but of course we don't want to think about it. I write in my book about how not long after losing Caitlin, a man who was only my husband's age put his arm around Nick and said, "Oh, pal, I'm so sorry. I can't imagine." And that night, that man went to bed and never woke up. After Caitlin was gone, I wished I had so much more of her. For every snippet I had of her talking and being like this adorable snippet.
That's it. Hey, what are you doing?
For every snippet of that I had like that, I had 1,000 videos of this little guy doing not much at all. But when I began to write Little Matches, I was fortunate in that she had written so much. I was able to gather her emails and texts and essays, her musings on life and meaning and purpose. And so her words inside Little Matches live on, and they inspire others. A passage she wrote about courage seems to have struck a chord with so many people, so I'm going to read it. When I feel myself flailing, grasping, panicking with pain or hurt, I get a notion in my head, always, and remember that there is courage. Courage is the answer, because courage doesn't negate the problem. It exists within the problem. And when you realize the answer lies in taking in the problem and living in spite of it, with full awareness of it, you feel a new option and a new sense of hope in life. So I was able to cobble together like all of the writing and so many of her belongings and weave all of her into Little Matches. Her legacy and mine exist. And at this point, I would normally ask, have you thought about your legacy? But obviously you have, because you're here. So we all have stories. We all have wisdom to share. I set this workshop up to urge everyone to consider conducting a life interview with a loved one. And I also recommend that you do it for yourself. It's a great tool for reflecting on who you are, what you stand for, how you feel about your life, and what wisdom you might like to pass along. Let me repeat what I said a minute ago. We always think we have more time. Let me tell you a little story that illustrates that. I've always been a volunteer of one kind or another. And since Caitlin's death, I have felt a calling to speak to the state of end-of-life care in this country. So I trained as a certified end-of-life doula through a program at the University of Vermont. An end-of-life doula provides support and comfort to humans as they approach death, like a birth doula, only on the other side of that arc. My favorite part of the training was legacy work, helping people craft their life stories. I realized that I could have used the right words to conduct a legacy interview with Caitlin, even during the transplant wait. I could have said, hey bud, you know how much I love oral histories and how valuable they were to me when I was working on my book. I might start a new volunteering project helping people record their stories. You're one of the most interesting people I know. She was. Will you help me practice? She would have loved talking about herself. Don't we all? I would have her actual voice ruminating on what's meaningful. I would have all her ways of laughing, of speaking with passion and conviction. All of it would be recorded. I completed the certification in late 2019 with the intent to begin hospice training in early 2020. I also had it in the back of my mind to conduct a legacy interview with my mother in Maine. Here she is in her 1970s maxi skirt. She was a member of the Historical Society, and I'm pretty sure the occasion was the celebration of America's bicentennial. She loved history and books and had the kind of memory I can only dream of having. She had been a really great source of historic details for me when I wrote Cascade, which is a novel I wrote about the past. So I looked forward to recording an interview, and then I was going to transcribe it and give it to members of my family for the holidays. Don't wreck your eyes trying to read this. It's just here to make a point. The point being that I've learned from immersing myself in long pages of text messages I had with Caitlin that there is something precious and immediate about reading transcribed conversations, even completely mundane ones like this. With a life interview, my mother's stories truly would be able to live on for her descendants. And I had time. She was 83, but chugging along, living at my sister's with no overt threats to her health. But in January of 2020, my sister wrote to say that mom was deteriorating. She might've had a mild stroke. They weren't sure. There was an MRI scheduled. But regardless, she was failing by the day, and it was clear she was going to need to go into a care center. In the meantime, my sister had to go out of town for a week and needed me to come up and help. Those days and nights involved numbing routine and a lot of physical effort. My mother could barely move on her walker. She needed help getting off the toilet, out of her chair, all of it. What you're seeing here is a still image from the webcam we put in her living room for safety. She had just fallen badly, and we were both hurt. She was hurt from the fall, me from deadlifting her up off the floor. my last night there, before my sister came home, it occurred to me that I should do the legacy interview, but it had been a long day, a really long day. I wanted to go upstairs and have dinner and a glass of wine. I told myself that once she was in the care center, the life interview would be the perfect activity for a visit. But we didn't know that it wasn't a mild stroke she'd had, but cancer, and it was in her brain. And we didn't know that once she was in the care center, COVID would almost immediately close it down to visitors. I sent her a pretty notebook with a pen and a list of questions. But when we Zoomed and I asked her if she'd been able to do any of it, she just shook her head. For weeks, we all visited outside, waving through windows and watching while a priest administered last rites. A few of us were allowed in at the end, but by then she was transitioning. She couldn't communicate. And again, as with Caitlin, I berated myself as I picked through scraps of memory and old messages to write an obituary. We always think we have more time. So we are going to make time right now. A life story project can take any form, go in any direction. Letters, time capsules, scrapbooks, videos, you name it. You can hire someone for $2,500 to do it all for you. But here, as a start, I'm going to lead you through a small project, a voice recording that you can transcribe and print. Transcription is important, as anyone who recognizes these relics can attest to. Audio video is precious, of course, but the formats change all the time. And I honestly cringe to know that people are entrusting their precious, precious memories to the ether. Technologies change, but so far we still have paper and words. With a transcription, you'll have something tangible that can be held, saved, and passed down through generations. First of all, I just would like to point out the difference as I see it between oral histories and legacy slash life stories. Oral historians have long gone around collecting people's stories in as much detail as possible to preserve a record of time and place. The recordings are usually hours long and full of detail. They can be quite tedious, but they're useful records. When I was writing my novel of the 1930s, I really relied on these histories. This is what one looks like, although I actually made this one up for a novel I'm writing. It's just pages and pages of questions and answers. A life story, a legacy story is more shaped and nuanced. A life story is a story, it's narrative. We hear facts about a person's situation and it can be truly hard to empathize, but we learn their story and we cry. An oral history might tell you that milkmen used to deliver milk in quart-sized glass bottles and set them on people's back steps 3 mornings a week. A legacy story will tell you how a particular kind milkman delivered free milk every Monday to someone's struggling widowed mother in 1952, teaching a young kid a lifelong lesson about generosity. So let's go back to that word legacy, that idea of passing on your learned wisdom. Let's think about rituals and how humans create and enact rituals as a way to connect to each other and to the past. I love how this UVA professor describes rituals. Rituals connect us to groups. They connect us to the divine. They suggest a deeper world of meaning beyond the mundane habits of the everyday. They can transcend time, connecting us to our ancestors and to those who will come after us. There is some evidence that taking part in rituals may release endorphins, which act on the opiate receptors in our brains, which can ease pain and anxiety and produce pleasure. So we're going to make the life interview a ritual of sorts, something meaningful and pleasant. We're going to slow down right now, shake ourselves into the present, into the here and now. A teacher I had when I was a kid used a bell to help us focus. So I am going to ring my Balinese bell right now and ask everyone to just take a moment. A nice long deep breath, hold it, let it out. Touch something nearby. Notice the texture. I've got a stone from Italy on my desk. It's beautiful and smooth. Okay, we're in the moment. This is where we want to be when we conduct our life interviews, which means we want to plan them, make time for them, make them special. Here are some good tips. If you're not interviewing yourself, approach your subject. Explain that a life interview is a wonderful way to reflect on life, process important transformational events, reflect on meaning, and pass on learned wisdom. Now, with the elderly or sick, the idea of doing a life interview can be alarming, so it's wise to figure out the best way to broach the idea, depending on the individual. You have to know your subject here. With my mother, I knew that I would have had to bring up the idea in the right way once it was clear to us that her life was coming to an end. With her, because she was a big storyteller anyway, with that great memory, I might have said something like, "We've always loved your stories. I'd like to start a family history project. Can I start with you?" I also might have bitten the bullet, so to speak. Hospice nurses tell story after story of patients who don't talk about their imminent death because they think their loved ones can handle it, when in fact, they'd really like to talk about it. So it can be a tricky place to navigate, but approaching from an almost neutral, calm place of openness and love and support is a good start, I have found. But not everyone will be open to the idea, so don't record secretly. If someone doesn't want to do it, it's certainly their right. Offer to conduct the interview wherever the subject feels most at ease. The spot should be private and quiet, welcoming and comforting. It's good to have water or tea available. Establish a time limit, especially for people who like to chit chat. I'm suggesting 30 minutes. 30 minutes is easy to schedule. It's a manageable amount of time for someone to spend talking, especially if they're ill or elderly. And 30 minutes is easy to transcribe. Have your questions ready. I'm going to be providing you with some sample questions, which you can use verbatim or you can use them as a point of departure. Know your recording app and practice with it so there won't be any glitches. I just use the app, the voice recording app on my iPhone, but there are plenty of apps available. And of course, there are traditional standalone recorders. I think they still exist. Conducting the life interview. Get comfortable. Ready the recording app and place it between you where it can pick up the sound of both voices. Briefly explain that you will be asking questions, but they're not set in stone. That if your subject doesn't want to answer any particular question, it's absolutely fine. When you ask your questions, take care to maintain eye contact and refrain from responses other than encouraging murmurs, you know, right, okay. Keep in mind that it's an interview, not a conversation. Be conscious of framing questions so that they are open-ended and don't reflect your own opinions. Avoid leading questions such as, "Was it terrible when your father left the family?" Instead, you might ask, "How did you feel when your father left your family?" Follow-up questions can be helpful, such as, "Can you give me an example of that?" I'm going to read the questions/prompts, and the list will be available afterward. But for now, you might want to just close your eyes and just reflect on the prompts or jot down notes. I obviously won't be allowing for the normal amount of time for answering inside of our short time here today. So my first three prompts are not for verbally answering. They are just to start the process. They are for reflection. Who are you? What is your identity? What else are you? Okay. When you were a child, what did you enjoy most about life? What have you liked best about your adult life so far? Recall a challenging time in your life. What was it like? What did you learn? If you had the power to solve one and only one problem in the world, what would it be? Where are you most comfortable and content? What is the texture of that place? What are the details? If you were very ill or nearing end of life, what would be the best way a loved one could support you? Think of an ancestor you know of but never met. If you could communicate with that person, what would you say? Likewise, think of a descendant you will never know. If you could communicate with that person, what would you say? What have been the most influential experiences in your life? What, if anything, would you have done differently in your life? What do you know now that you wish you had known when you were younger? Over time, have you changed the way you look at life, at people? Do you have a philosophy of life? What's your best piece of advice for living? If a young person came to you asking, what's the most important thing for living a good life, what would you say? Fill in the blank. I am looking forward to. What do you see as your purpose in life? Okay, ponder these three things before I ask the last question. Your resume. Your life. Your eulogy. And the last question is, what would you like your loved ones to remember about you? So once you have your recording, promise yourself you'll transcribe it immediately. You can do it yourself, which can be a little tedious, but a half hour is not hard at all. And it can be nice to listen to it again anyway. Or you can use one of many transcription services that will do it for you for a small fee. I've used this one before. but a quick search online will give you plenty of options. When I sent my first legacy subject her transcript, I asked for feedback, and this is a vibrant woman in midlife with no health issues. And she said, "I like that the Legacy Project gives you a chance to think about legacy and life philosophy and not just end of life issues. The range of questions allowed me to think about a lot of things that I usually think about separately. I was pleasantly surprised to see that I have a pretty coherent life philosophy." When Caitlin turned 21, I made good on a vow I had made when she was diagnosed to do a meaningful, time-heavy volunteer stint if she lived to be 21. I became a mentor to a high school student, which came with a firm commitment to spend time with her every week of high school until graduation. This was my girl, Amy, seen here with Henry back in the day. She was a delight, and she's a remarkable young adult now. She and her sister review books on Instagram, and the very day I was writing this part of the workshop, I saw that Amy had posted this, and I loved how she mused about the timelessness of words in her post. People live on forever through stories. It's so true. It's all we've got. So once you've transcribed it, print it, make it pretty, keep it plain, whatever, just print it and share it. Again, all of this is so flexible and easy to personalize. So recently my brother found another little snippet of my daughter that I didn't know existed. And it's such a precious record. I'm going to share it with you, because I love to talk about her.
It's a great first signing. I'm so proud of my mother that when I walked out a bunch of grapes and the harp player was playing, I teared up. And I was glad I had my glasses on.
Hey, little kitten. So my hope is that this little workshop and little matches will encourage people to think deeply about life and purpose and what's really important at the end of the day. So thank you so much.
I'm still speechless here. I had chills just throughout your presentation. So moving and so incredibly meaningful. Thank you. What a gift to all of us.
Thank you. It's a gift I like giving. Thank you so much.
I thank you, Marianne, for all you have shared with us. I do have this sense this is just the beginning, that we'll be hopefully circling back. There's such a need for this, such an interest in it. And I do want to stress for those of you who joined us who have lost a loved one to CF, that CFRI does offer a support group for those who have lost loved ones to CF. It's held twice a month. It's a drop-in thing. You can just come and see if you're comfortable. It is facilitated by Issa Stenzel Burns, who herself lives with CF, is post-transplant, and is an LCSW who works at a hospice. So very well-versed in end-of-life issues. So I do encourage those of you to go to our website and you can register.
I should probably go to one of those. I mean, just today I went to Bloomingdale's and Caitlin worked there when she was in college and I just started crying. It's just hard. It never goes away.
The triggers everywhere.
Yeah.
So with that, I thank everybody who joined us today.
Thank you so much.
We will release this next week. You'll be able to really slow down and savor each of the beautiful presentation you shared. And I thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. And thank you to everyone who watched it and will watch it. And hopefully I'll see you again.
I wish you all safety and good health. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.